This is episode 4 of the podcast. If you haven't yet listened to episode 3, check that out first. We'll meet you back here. It was the fall of 2015, and the clock at Penn Plaza was ticking. Most residents had voted to approve the deal with the city and the developer, but Gail Williams and Bob Jamieson had to get everyone to sign an individual copy.
It was hard getting everything into place and everything that needed to be done. We start going floor to floor.
And I, who is it? It's Bob Jamieson. What you want? I'm with the tenant council. I got a relocation package here for you.
That they needed to read, to go over, and to sign to get their money. We hand-delivered all those.
Now, if you don't agree with it, when the date is up, they're going to evict you. You just can't stop it.
It was panic all over again. The deal the city signed off on gave people in the first building 5 months to find a new place and move. It was the middle of winter. People were frantic they were going to wind up on the streets. It quickly became clear just how tight the rental market was.
There ain't enough spots in East Liberty for all these families.
And then a new flyer appeared at Penn Plaza. There was a meeting about the relocation. At the bottom, big block letters read, Homes for All. Reclaim, remain, rebuild our cities. It was the first hint that maybe the future of Penn Plaza wasn't so settled after all. From 90.5 WESA, this is Land and Power. Who has it, what they do with it, and how that shapes the cities around us. I'm Margaret J. Krause. Just a couple months after the city, the Gumbergs, and Penn Plaza residents negotiated a deal, a new group of people came on the scene. They looked at the fight for the apartment complex and saw it as a symptom of a much larger problem. They thought the deal was all wrong. Today, how a rare break in city ranks allowed Pittsburghers to change their city forever. Crystal Jennings, the one who started her track career in an East Liberty parking lot, her dad lived at Penn Plaza. He saw one of those relocation flyers and he called Crystal.
I said, all right, let me put it in my calendar to come and pick you up and we'll go together.
At 1 p.m. on December 21st, 2015, a small group of Penn Plaza residents sat on folding metal chairs arranged in rows at a nearby nonprofit. Kevin Quisenberry, the lawyer who helped negotiate and write the deal, was there to explain it. He went page by page through the Memorandum of Understanding. Everyone at Penn Plaza had signed it, but Crystal could tell some of what Kevin said was news.
People signed something that they didn't know what they were signing. They saw money, so they signed it. So then a lot of their concerns were, well, they can't do this and we can't do that. And he's like, but it's in the MOU, you signed it.
Crystal's dad, Jerome Jennings, had understood the deal. He signed it because he figured something was better than nothing, but he felt fairly certain it was full of empty promises. He was so upset, Crystal suggested he take a walk. Helen Gerhardt went with him.
He said, I've been through this like over and over again, and it's always going to be the same story, and there's always going to be people who say that they, you know, they want to help, but then they just leave, and it's just like all a waste of my time.
Crystal says it was one of the first really cold days of the year.
They were so loud outside of the building. I actually gave them my car keys and said, would you two please go sit in my car, which is a couple doors down, turn the heat on, and y'all can talk all y'all want. Because Helen didn't want to, you know, move away from him because my dad was feeling some type of way. He was very upset.
Helen Gerhardt wasn't a Penn Plaza resident. She worked for an anti-hunger nonprofit and served on the city's Commission on Human Relations. She was part of a new group of activists drawn to Penn Plaza.
The trauma and the grief that so many of those people went through was literally life-threatening.
This new group was a mix of housing experts, grad students, nonprofit employees, and Penn Plaza residents. The group didn't have a name yet, but they were clear on what they wanted. First, they wanted to help Penn Plaza residents navigate this move. That was Crystal Jennings' only plan, to help her dad get settled in a new place. But the rest of the group saw she had a knack for working with people.
I wasn't trying to get pulled in. I was pulling back, but I got pulled in and pulled back and I pulled in.
She started to help with the group's second goal, to get the city to recognize Penn Plaza as a symptom of a much bigger problem. Lots of people can't afford America's most livable city.
We were freaking fed up. We were fed up.
That sentiment is shared pretty widely across the United States. Millions of renters nationwide pay over half their wages for housing alone. counties and cities have grappled with the housing squeeze for decades. And by early 2015, the issue reached Pittsburgh City Hall. The question of how development affects people's ability to live here began to light up city agencies and departments. There was a huge project planned for City Councilor Daniel Lavelle's district. You'll hear more about that in the next episode. It prompted him to introduce legislation to create an affordable housing task force.
I don't know how bad this is, but I know we need to have a conversation about where Black people can afford to live and how, when we start doing economic development, how are we going to deal with displacement, all these sort of issues.
Then Penn Plaza happened, and Daniel's affordable housing task force started to meet weekly.
It's like, oh, wow, we got a serious, serious problem on our hands that we need to deal with. Penn Plaza made it real.
A few blocks away from City Hall, the Gumbergs also got down to work that winter. They wrote checks for resident relocation. They hired an architect. Then they filed for that crucial zoning change the city had promised to support in the deal. It took a while, but the zoning change bumped along through the bureaucratic process. Then, after a year of work, the Gumbergs went to Pittsburgh's Planning Commission for approval to move forward.
All right, we will begin the briefing portion of the Planning Commission hearing.
No major development happens in Pittsburgh without the approval of the city's planning commission. The mayor appoints the 9 commissioners. They're not city employees, and they're independent. But the idea is to choose people who share your vision for the city and will help you map your ideas to reality. Christine Mondor runs a green design and consulting firm, and she chairs the commission.
Development has taken on a negative connotation, but no progress comes without development of some sort.
How the city of Pittsburgh manages development gets a little complicated. There's the Department of City Planning, and then there's the Planning Commission. They sound similar, but they're very different. Think of the 9-member Planning Commission as the tip of the city planning iceberg. Dive below the surface and there's a huge mass of rules and information, what can be done where and why. This is the purview of the Department of City Planning. They examine development plans for each project to see if they meet the city's requirements. Then they make a recommendation to the Planning Commission, either to approve or to reject. It's pretty rare for the department to give a thumbs up or down and have the commission go the other way. But it isn't a foregone conclusion. Christine says evaluating projects is both science and art.
Sometimes it's very clear cut and, you know, straightforward, and then sometimes there isn't. But the Planning Commission's criteria tend to be more interpretive, and so that's why you'll get these projects that maybe, you know, have this gray zone.
On the day of the Gumbergs hearing, it was a full house.
We got, I don't know, at least 50 people there.
That's Molly Nichols. She was part of the new activist group. In her day job, she advocated for public transit. I wasn't at Planning Commission that day, so I asked people to describe what they remembered.
It was cold, so everybody had, you know, big jackets and trying to find a place to put your jacket while there's so many people in the room.
A member of the Department of City Planning took the mic and said staff recommend the project for approval, a thumbs up. And then Larry Gumberg's lawyer, Jonathan Kamen, got up to present. A PowerPoint flickered up on the room's 2 TV screens. It read Penley Park South. Jonathan walked the commission through the details. The development would be a mix of retail and housing. He talked about the deal signed with Penn Plaza residents. He said the developer knew significant community dialogue must continue to occur. Then he clicked ahead to a sketch of the future project, a mid-rise apartment building, and then, facing the main street, a brand new Whole Foods market. When it was time for public comment, the line for the mic looped around the entire room. For hours, concerned neighbors, housing advocates, and experts testified. Penn Plaza residents told the commission what it was like to lose their homes, to move away from friends and family.
People wanted to push back on this system that had enabled something like this to happen.
The light outside faded, and people's parking meters ran out. It got so late, the commission decided to postpone a decision until January 2017. Finally, at that next meeting, Christine Mondor called for a vote. Unanimously, 9-0. The commission voted to reject the plan. Christine says the plan hadn't been carefully vetted by the community.
It was not just a land use issue. It was a kind of profound change to the community and needed to have that conversation as such. So
Helen Gerhardt says the room was elated.
My memory is of a feeling of victory, for sure.
Crystal Jennings says it shifted her whole sense of what was possible.
You can make change. And I didn't know that. I thought I had to go about the way that the rules were written and not fight against the rules that are written.
This was not what the Gumbergs expected. They had been within their rights. They negotiated when they didn't have to. They held meetings. They followed the deal worked out in the mayor's conference room. And now this? That night, on Facebook, the activists shared the news. Their post read, "When we fight, we win." A week later, the Gumbergs filed to appeal the Planning Commission's decision. 8 days after that, they filed a legal complaint saying the Planning Commission hadn't issued a written decision, so the project was approved, by default. There was mudslinging in the press. The Gumbergs accused Mayor Bill Peduto of trying to kill the project. Mayor Bill Peduto accused the Gumbergs of avoiding community process. The city filed its own legal challenge. And then they called a press conference. On February 21st, 2017, Kevin Ackland, the mayor's chief of staff, sat at the head of another long oval table, surrounded by reporters. Even though he had helped negotiate the deal, Kevin had never really made peace with how things played out at Penn Plaza.
They did not get an approval to move forward with this development, and, you know, absent a judge's order, we don't expect it to move forward.
Kevin and his staff were still working to make sure all the Penn Plaza residents were taken care of. But in public, the city had been pretty quiet about Penn Plaza. When the Planning Commission rejected the Gumbergs' plan and the Gumbergs filed a legal challenge, things seemed to shift. Kevin says they opted to keep pushing. It was another chance to demonstrate the city's commitment to residents.
To take actions that really take advantage of a misalignment of economic power is wrong. And there's no other way to put it. This is not gray. This is black and white.
Everything seemed to pick up speed all at once. There was a flurry of activity before the courts. Challenges, injunctions, closed-door negotiations. Meanwhile, the activists, now called Penn Plaza Support and Action Coalition, created pressure in the streets. They set up a living room in a major East Liberty intersection, complete with couch, armchair, and floor lamp.
Housing is a human right!
We're going to make displacement visible today.
They protested outside the Gumbergs' downtown office.
We are demanding that the Gumbergs accept the city's offer to buy the remaining Penn Plaza building so that it can be held in trust and become tenant-owned affordable housing.
Yeah! They picketed an alumni event and fundraiser for Brian and Zach's private high school. They protested at the end of Larry's Street. They held signs that said things like, "Gumbergs destroy affordable housing." Around this time, a flyer went up on telephone poles and bus shelters all around East Liberty. It was a picture of Brian Gumberg's face. Little pull-off tabs at the bottom listed his cell phone number. Penn Plaza Support and Action says they were not behind that particular campaign. But the objective of all their protests was to shame the Gumbergs, to make other developers think twice before making any plans. And then, in May of 2017, citing community concerns, Whole Foods dropped out of the Gumbergs' development. Activist Molly Nichols says it seemed to open up a whole new realm of possibility.
Oh, what are they going to do? Like, what's going to happen to this development?
For the people who lived at Penn Plaza, the damage was done. The final stage of demolition started in June. And by then, the people who used to live there were scattered all over the place. Donald Thomas moved to the Hill District.
We want to stay because, this is our neighborhood. Why can't we share in it?
Ruth Wooding did, too.
I ain't too pleased up there on the hill.
O'Harold Hoots and Karen Edmonds moved to the hill, and then moved again. Some people moved to buildings in East Liberty. Others wound up in neighborhoods farther away, or out in the suburbs. Philip Walker bought a house. Gail Williams moved to the next community over called Homewood. And Bob Jamison moved to an apartment building about a 10-minute walk away from Penn Plaza.
Did you want to walk up or did
Yeah. Is that...
Okay. The quickest way is this way. Okay.
Bob walks past where Penn Plaza used to be all the time, and I went with him one afternoon last winter. When we got there, he stood in front of the fence that traces the border of the site. At the time, it was empty. They hadn't broken ground yet.
Looks barren. It looks like one of those areas where you'd be watching a movie and it was like a nuclear war. And this is the only thing that's left.
Even after 5 years, Bob replays the moves sometimes. What would have happened if they'd negotiated with the Gumbergs sooner? If they'd asked for more compensation for leaving?
There's a lot of things that go through my head that I figured maybe, you know, it would have helped if I did this or did that. You know what I mean?
When we got back to his apartment, Bob asked me if I'd ever seen a movie called 2 Weeks Notice. It's a rom-com in which bumbling billionaire Hugh Grant and his brainy, leggy lawyer Sandra Bullock fall in love in spite of themselves.
I'm a sucker for romantic movies. I like happy ending.
Bob asked because part of the movie made him think about Penn Plaza, not the happy ending.
It's a song in there that Joni Mitchell wrote.
Love Joni.
You ever hear the song?
He reached for his phone.
Okay.
And the first few bars of the Counting Crows version of Big Yellow Taxi poured out. They paved paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paved paradise.
Now, I didn't know Joni Mitchell was this heavy. That's brilliant. They paved paradise to put up a parking lot. It's like, you don't realize what you got till it's gone. That's the same way like in the community, right? Y'all change the whole community, you're destroying us, you know what I mean? And we know it's about progress, but y'all think that's all that matters, right?
I can imagine someone being like, was Penn Plaza paradise?
To some people that lived there, you know, that was their paradise.
By the time Bob settled into the new apartment in April of 2017, he didn't answer phone calls. A few people reached out to see if he wanted to keep working on housing issues, and he said no. For a long time, he didn't even talk with Gail.
I'm just trying to lay back and appreciate every morning I wake up.
Around the same time, Kevin Ackland stepped away from Penn Plaza 2. It had become a legal process, and the city's law department was handling it. But that wasn't the only thing. He'd gotten too close to it. He says it left a bad taste in his mouth.
You know, you take some validation in that if we didn't act, it could have been worse. But it was a bad situation. We made it less bad. Congratulations, right?
Without Kevin, a new set of negotiations began. No residents, no one from Penn Plaza support in action. Instead, there were a few different neighborhood groups. They talked about housing, but it wasn't at Penn Plaza. They decided the new development would help fund affordable housing through a complicated tax mechanism. And then the Gumbergs went back downtown to the Planning Commission again. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Americans are grappling with a huge question right now. Can we trust the cops?
These are the different reasons people were put on the list. Falsifying reports or records.
What if I told you that in states all across the country,
issuance of unlawful orders,
there are lists that could tell you if individual cops were trustworthy.
Obedience to laws and policies.
These lists can draw a straight line from an officer's name to past misconduct. The problem is, there's a good chance you're not allowed to see them.
To turn a blind eye is basically saying, well, I hope the justice system works. That's not good enough for me.
I'm Jason Moon. From New Hampshire Public Radio, Document, Season 1, The List. A podcast about one state's decades of secrecy around police misconduct. Binge all the episodes now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Because we are standing room only, if you see someone who obviously could use a seat, to give your seat and also to...
The Gumbergs brought a new plan to their second Planning Commission hearing. Instead of housing in retail, they'd build office space in retail. More than 1,200 people signed a petition to say the development should not be allowed to move forward without affordable housing on site. Speaker after speaker asked the Planning Commission to reject the new plan.
I've talked to hundreds of people about this plan. As soon as the words Penn Plaza are uttered,
Most people recognize the history of displacement there expressed.
This would set a damaging precedent of uprooting and displacing hundreds of mostly African-American households to make room for massive high-end retail and office complexes.
I think it's clear that the people whose lives are most affected by this plan demand the City Planning Commission reject LG's development proposal.
I'm here today because I'm really highly concerned that our government has forgotten what they are supposed to do.
Some people were in favor, including Larry Gumberg's friend, Reverend Daryl Kennedy.
We have been to the table. We have negotiated. We have compromised on both sides. Thank you, and I pray that you will vote positive for this arrangement.
After nearly 3 hours, the commission began to deliberate. Christine Mondor thanked people for coming. She sounded tired and wary.
We, as a commission, cannot solve all the problems that have been put on our plate.
Equity, affordability, cultural preservation, a right to the city, even as it grows.
This project won't solve all those issues. There are no good decisions, and all options are bad in some capacity. But these are not as straightforward as it seems to you all.
5 hours after the meeting started, the commission approved.
4-2, it passes, and that's it.
Everyone began to gather up their things. Along with all the other reporters, I followed Larry, Brian, Zach, and their lawyer, Jonathan, outside to ask questions. In the middle of a question about taxes, I noticed some of the activists leaving the hearing room, and I turned to ask a guy named Dan Yablonsky for a comment. Dan said he wanted to hear what Larry had to say.
He's going to receive.
That's when Larry saw Dan. He stopped. Dan had been part of that group of protesters at the end of Larry's street. He held a sign that said, "Our families can't move into your empty promises." For a full 5 seconds, Larry just looked at Dan.
Please walk away. Please walk away. You stood out in front of my house and defamed my family. Walk away! This meeting's over, and we'll be happy to have this discussion in a private space. Let's go.
At the time, I was stunned by Larry's reaction. He'd been so quiet. Through the meetings and the protests and the crowd at the end of his street, he almost never said a word. And then, at the moment he finally won, he broke. This only made sense to me 2 years later when I pieced it together. I think I know why Larry was so angry that day. The city let Larry take the fall for Penn Plaza, alone. But they knew the Gumbergs planned to redevelop the site. They knew all along. I spent months trying to untangle who knew what and when. It made my head spin. Larry maintained his lawyer met with the city, and that the city knew his plans for the site would eventually require people to move.
I just want to be clear when I think about it. Was the meeting with this administration before June of 2015?
Oh, yes.
And the administration was aware that you were going to redevelop?
Yes.
It was a month later, in July of 2015, that news of Penn Plaza broke. Some people got letters saying their leases would not be renewed. They'd have to find a new place to live. Some of them reached out to a state representative named Ed Gainey, and Ed's office helped them get the attention of other public officials.
I got a phone call one day from Ed Gainey, our state representative.
Kevin Acklin was the mayor's chief of staff and the city's chief development officer. He maintained he was taken by surprise, and that Ed's call was the first he heard of Penn Plaza.
I can be very definitive that the first indication of any kind of development, to my recollection, at Penn Plaza was when we got notices of people being displaced. I didn't know where it was.
He says he had to search for Penn Plaza on Google Earth. I still couldn't understand why Larry and Kevin were so far apart on this. So I went to talk with someone else in the administration, Mayor Bill Peduto. Bill remembers the day he heard about the letters too, and that call from Ed Gainey.
Kevin came in
and said, "Boss, did you know they were going to evict?" And I'm like, "Please tell me it's not Penn Plaza."
At first, this went right by me. I was in the middle of another question when my brain finally processed it. Why did Bill think first of Penn Plaza if Penn Plaza was a big surprise?
Actually, you said, "Please tell me it's not Penn Plaza."
Yeah, because we were working with Gumberg on a development plan for that site. But we had a good working understanding with the developer that there would be a plan for the people before there would be announcements of the development.
Bill was the last person I expected to confirm Larry Gumberg's assertions that the city already knew, especially because this seemed so different from his response in 2015. Remember that meeting, the church full of Penn Plaza residents and public officials? Bill sat in front of that room full of people about to lose their homes, and he told them he only found out about it a week before.
I would not have run for office if that were the way that we were going to do business in this town. And the first that we heard of it was the day before it got in the newspaper, because some of the tenants reached out to Representative Gainey, and he called up and said, "What the hell is going on?"
But as Bill told me in our interview, he knew about this development before his office ever got that call. He had a, quote, good working understanding with the Gumbergs. But he didn't mention that, not in that meeting, and not in the 5 years since. Looking back, Bill says he meant the city was surprised by the letters asking people to leave, not by the development. He says he thought that was clear, but that's not how people took it. That's not how I took it. Documentation reviewed by WESA indicates discussions with city officials began in the spring of 2015. It was at least 3 months before the church meeting, before non-renewal letters went out to residents. Exactly who was part of those discussions and what they talked about is unclear. All along, the city said if they'd only had a heads up, all the pain and confusion and scrambling could have been avoided. But they had a heads up. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that they actually wanted something specific. Advance notice of when the Gumbergs would ask people to leave. I don't know how explicitly that was spelled out.
I said, make sure to take care of the people. And I assumed that that meant that over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, they'd start having meetings and start meeting with the community and everything else. And instead, they just sort of announced it. And there was no plan for the people.
None of the city's rules said the Gumbergs had to do what the city wanted them to do. It's not written or codified anywhere. In the absence of clear expectations, two people understood their understanding in two different ways. Bill Peduto assumed he knew what Larry Gumberg would do. He was wrong. I asked the mayor if there are guardrails in place now to prevent something like this from happening again. He turned that question over, thinking out loud.
You can't call them rules. You can't call them policies. You can't call them laws. Are there guidelines that would make somebody follow the process that we require, even though it's not a requirement?
Ultimately, this is where the mayor landed.
I think if anything, it's the example of Penn Plaza.
In mid-November, Mayor Bill Peduto contradicted the statements he made during our recorded interview. In an email to WESA, a spokesperson wrote the city didn't know about Larry Gumberg's plans for Penn Plaza, that the extent of their knowledge was a passing comment Larry made to the mayor at an event. Larry's new development is called Liberty East. It'll have office and retail space and be anchored by Whole Foods Market. They came back in 2019. When the project is done, his company will owe a lot more in local property taxes. Or it would, but the land is in a special tax zone that blankets part of East Liberty. Any developer in that zone can take the value of their increased tax bill and use it to pay down some of the costs of their project. Instead, Larry agreed to put half the money in a fund to help build affordable housing in the neighborhood. This came out of that second round of negotiations. In the project's first phase, the move is expected to create about $2 million.
We are doing something that no other developer has done in Western Pennsylvania, and as far as I know, that no other developer has done in America.
Larry still thinks affordable housing is really the government's responsibility. But he says developers have a role to play, too.
Just because it's not the individual's responsibility doesn't mean the individual can't create the solution. We are very proud to be a part of the solution.
Pittsburgh's housing problem is much bigger than Penn Plaza, or even East Liberty. In 2016, a city task force estimated that Pittsburgh is short 20,000 units of affordable housing. There are vacant homes all over the city, but most have endured some 30 years of disrepair. It's expensive to make those homes livable. On top of that, they often have limited public transportation, and they're far away from grocery stores and doctor's offices. That's partly why neighborhoods in the middle of everything, like East Liberty, are so in demand. This is how it's possible to have displacement in a city with so many empty houses. I asked every person I interviewed if the fight over Penn Plaza changed Pittsburgh. Almost everyone said yes. Penn Plaza residents got some help. A lot of people said it wasn't enough. But the fight for the two apartment buildings in East Liberty drew attention to just how much Pittsburgh had changed and how new development affected people with fewer resources. That fight helped activists and the city to create something called the Housing Opportunity Fund. In 2018, Pittsburgh City Council voted to set aside $10 million a year for 12 years to renovate or build new housing. It's one of more than 700 similar trust funds across the country. The city is testing out other ways to increase affordable housing, too. The formerly working-class neighborhood of Lawrenceville is now a hip shopping and dining district. A pilot program there requires developers planning a certain number of units to make some affordable. Housing advocates hope to see the program extended to the whole city, but they expect it to be a fight. Just up the hill is Garfield. It lost a lot of population, but in recent years has caught the eye of real estate investors. Another pilot program there allows people to build accessory dwelling units on their properties. But Pittsburgh continues to grapple with the fallout from Penn Plaza. Crystal Jennings, whose dad lived at Penn Plaza, got into housing work full-time in 2020. She works to connect people with a land trust that sells affordable homes. Her dad died of cancer in 2018. She can't forget how Penn Plaza affected him, his neighbors, and her colleagues, how it made them scared and angry and tired.
It lingers. It sticks to their bones. It's like a muscle. Every time you move, you feel it.
Plenty of people are still angry with the developer, Larry Gumberg, and his sons. Helen Gerhart was one of the activists with Penn Plaza Support in Action. She understands that anger, but she says the problem's bigger than them. The Gumbergs just made a convenient villain for the Peduto administration.
It allowed them to personalize the issue rather than address their systemic responsibilities.
Because the truth is, the system was working exactly as it was designed. Despite all the changes made since then, that system remains basically the same. Gail Williams, who raised the alarm about Penn Plaza, she worries that's the part people are missing.
There's always been a Penn Plaza somewhere in the city of Pittsburgh, in Allegheny County. There's always going to be a Penn Plaza. Why aren't they working on that? That's the bottom line. Penn Plaza, that's dead. That's gone.
Some people worry there's another looming housing crisis. It won't hinge on tearing down buildings, because the buildings are already gone. Next time on Land and Power. Nearly 20% of Pittsburgh's land is vacant. It's cheap, and it's for sale. Land and Power is a production of 90.5 WESA, reported and hosted by me, Margaret J. Krause. The show was edited and produced by Liz Reed. Production help from Katie Blackley, Kylie Kaczynski, and Sarah Kovash. Fact-checking by Sonu Babu, Patrick Doyle, Mary Rose O'Donnell, Isabel Schmeller, and Naomi Sterobin. Special thanks to NPR's Story Lab team, including Uri Berliner, Nigeri Eaton, Adelina Lansianese, Michael May, and Yowei Shaw. Thanks also goes to John Axtell, David Boylan, Sabina Dietrich, Kate Giamarisi, Jennifer Haven, Brian Izette, Chris Ivey, and Demi Kolke. John Miller, Mel Packer, Larkin Page Jacobs, Lucy Perkins, and Chris Potter. Carl Redwood, Ellis Robinson, Celeste Scott, Judy Sue, and Richard Swartz. Randall Taylor, Mary Lee Williams, and Dan Yablonsky. We've got photos of Helen, Crystal, Christine, Kevin, Bill, and more at landandpowerpod.com.